Tonight I have a very special show for you. We got a great ambassador of music, one of the great creators, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legendary performer, Roger McGuinn. He'll be in town on Saturday night, bringing you a history of his music. And I have had the opportunity to ask him a few questions. We spoke on the telephone, and I'm going to get this started with asking Roger about his origins in music, what his influences were, where he comes from musically. Let's take a listen.
Well, I really started out with Elvis Presley and Heartbreak Hotel and rock and roll, and I got into Gene Vincent and Carl Perkins and the Everly Brothers and Johnny Cash for a while. But then a folk singer named Bob Gibson came to my high school when I was 15 and played a set on the five-string banjo. Now, Bob Gibson lived near Pete Seeger in upstate New York, and he learned how to play the banjo from Pete.
Oops. Oopsie.
I really started out with Elvis Presley and Heartbreak Hotel and rock and roll. I got into Gene Vincent and Carl Perkins and the Everly Brothers and Johnny Cash for a while. But then a folk singer named Bob Gibson came to my high school when I was 15 and played a set on the five-string banjo. Now, Bob Gibson lived near Pete Seeger in upstate New York, and he learned how to play the banjo from Pete. And he took a lot of the songs that Pete Seeger used to do and kind of souped them up. He made them a little more, I don't know what. They just had more of a zing to them. And so he came to my high school and did that. He did a 45-minute set of that kind of music. And I was so enthralled with it, I went running up to my music teacher and asked her what it was. And she told me it was folk music. And I said, well, I'd heard Burl Ives and the Weavers, and it didn't, you know, he didn't sound like that. So she said, well, if you really like folk music, there's a new school that just opened up called the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago. Why don't you go over and check it out? So I did, and that's where I got into the five-string banjo and the 12-string guitar.
So we're going to listen to a couple of songs from Roger's past. Here's Elvis Presley with that inspirational song, Heartbreak Hotel. Then we're going to hear a couple of songs from Bob Gibson, too.
Whiskey in the jar.
There you go. Bob Gibson, who was inspirational in Roger McGuinn's attraction to folk music. And so indeed, to the new school, he went and learned how to play banjo, learned how to play the 12-string guitar, would go down to the clubs. But I tell you what, let's let him tell the story.
For a couple of years at the Old Town School of Folk Music, I got good enough to get a job at a coffee house. And after the coffee house gig, I'd go down to the Gate of Horn, which is where all the professional folk singers, like the Limelighters and different groups. Bob Gibson played there. And I went down there one night, and the Limelighters were having a jam session with the late Theodore Bickel. He just passed away a couple of days ago. And they asked me to play banjo, and I did it until 5 o'clock in the morning, and then they wanted to hire me. So I ended up getting a job with them and recording with them on their RCA album tonight in person.
Well, you know, that's really an amazing thing for – you would have been maybe 17, 18 years old then.
Yeah, I was 17.
Wow.
And right. And I was still in high school. So they asked me if I could join them right away, and I said no, I had to wait until I graduated.
Yeah, what a great story. I'm going to play a Limelighters cut from that album, Tonight in Person. Then we're also going to listen to some of the Chad Mitchell Trio. So let's take a listen to the Limelighters from the – this is an album that a lot of my parents' friends had, and when we'd go to visit the friends, they would play this particular song, which really, you know, I was maybe 7 or 8 myself, and I didn't really understand quite what they were talking about. But let's hear to Madeira, Madeira.
In answer to a steadily diminishing number of requests, we should like to sing an Edwardian ballad entitled Have Some Madeira, Madeira. It's a song which describes certain of the curious properties of a nauseous sweet wine. And I think we should view it as a courting song. More specifically, a song of seduction, which nevertheless bears the stamp of approval of forces for good in the community. It begins with a waltz-like passage in B-flat major, which has, it's proven itself to be well-nigh irresistible to those of us with a history of flamenco rejection. Lagadiam, 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 lagadiam. Scooby-dooby, oola-dooby, shooby and ra-ha-ha. She was young, she was pure, she was new, she was nice. She was fair, she was sweet, 17. He was old, he was vile, and no stranger to vice. He was bad, he was base, he was mean. He had slyly inveigled her up to his flat to view his collection of stamps. All unperforated. And he said, as he hastened to put out the cat, the wine, the cigar, and the lamps.
There you go. That's the Limelighters from the album that Roger McGuinn played on tonight in person. Let's hear a little bit more about his days as a session man.
I worked with the Chad Mitchell Trio for a couple of years and then Bobby Darin, and that led me to be a studio musician in New York, where I met Judy Collins and was musical director on her third album for Elektra, and played with Paul Simon and the Irish Rovers and quite a few other artists, folk artists in the early 60s.
Indeed. Let's take a listen to some Chad Mitchell Trio now. Here's the Draft Dodger Rag by the Chad Mitchell Trio.
We've lit pneumonia and TB and plagues that used to mock us. We've got the onus and the sun. The smallpox cannot pock us. We found the antibodies for the Staphylostreptococcus. But oh, the universal curse, from Vietnam to Korea. The bug of bugs that bugs us still and begs for panacea. Oh, who will find the antidote for pentagonorrhea? I'm just a typical defense plant.
Yeah, there you go. That's the Chad Mitchell Trio. That was the Draft Dodger Rag. Well, shortly after working with him, he was working with Bobby Darin, was Roger McGuinn, and at the Brill Building. And the Brill Building in New York, most people who are into music know that that's the great place that so many fantastic songs, Lieber and Stoller worked there, and Goffin and Carole King and Jerry Goffin worked there. So some of the greatest songs ever came out of that building. And Roger worked in the building for a while. Let's hear his take on that.
Well, Bobby Darin, his voice got a little rough, and he decided to open a publishing company in the Brill Building called PM Music. And he hired me as a songwriter, and the job was pretty simple. It was listen to the radio and copy songs, you know, write songs like the ones you heard out there. So going to the Brill Building was kind of a 9-to-5 job, where you go to a little cubicle and sit down on a metal chair with your guitar, and somebody else would be sitting at a piano, and you'd kind of knock out tunes all day and take a break in the middle for a cheeseburger and get back to work.
That sounds an exciting period of time in your life, I would imagine.
Well, it was exciting on one hand, but it was kind of boring on the other, because I was used to the road and performing in front of audiences, and that's a lot more interesting to me than sitting in a cubicle.
As we all can well imagine. I'm going to play a song now that Roger recorded on an album called the 12-String Story. Here's Ramblin' On, Roger McGuinn. that was Ramblin' On, Roger McGuinn, from the album The Complete 12-String Story. Well, it was shortly after that that he was called out to L.A. Let's let Roger tell the story about how he wound up at the Troubadour.
I was playing in coffee houses in Greenwich Village, and I was doing a mix of rock and roll and folk music, and the audience was not appreciating it. So I went out to L.A., and got a job at the Troubadour, opening up for Hoyt Axton, and I was doing the same kind of music, and they didn't like it either. but Gene Clark was in the audience, and he came backstage, and he said, let's write some songs, and that's how the Byrds all got together.
And indeed, the Byrds got together. First song that they recorded was the classic Dylan cut, Mr. Tambourine Man. Here's Roger talking about the recording process there.
Well, I was allowed to play with the Wrecking Crew because I'd been a studio musician in New York for a few years prior to that. The other guys were, especially Michael Clark, the drummer, was totally inexperienced, didn't have any studio chops. And so Hal Blaine was like miles above that. And it was exciting to play with the Wrecking Crew. It was really a great experience. I didn't know it at the time, but they were the ones that I used to admire when I was in the Brill Building. We used to take Phil Spector records and analyze them and go, wow, you know, listen to this and listen to that. And we'd even look at the little engravings that he put on the 45s where he'd write audio matrix. And wow, this guy's a genius. You know, we just loved Phil Spector. And the Wrecking Crew were the guys who played on all the Ronettes and the Crystals and Bobby Sox and all the different records that I loved so much.
So many other bands were not allowed to play on their own records, and it's almost as if the Wrecking Crew created the parts, and then the bands, when they took it live, had to like learn the parts that the Wrecking Crew had created for them.
Exactly. That did happen with the Association and other bands. Even the Beach Boys, where the Wrecking Crew did all the tracks, and then the Beach Boys had to learn how to play them.
Of course, now you guys were among the Byrds, that is, were among one of the first groups that eventually were able to do their own recording and play their own instruments.
Yeah, the only only single we didn't do was Mr. Tambourine Man, and the rest of it was all the Byrds, so they got to do it. The difference was, though, it took a long time when the Byrds got to do their own track.
It took longer, cost more money, and that's probably why they wanted the guys to do.
Exactly. That was the advantage of the studio guys, because they could knock it out in 1 3-hour session. And I think we got two songs in 1 3-hour session and took 77 takes to get Turn, Turn, Turn.
Wow.
With the Byrds doing it.
There you go. The story of the Wrecking Crew, Roger's experience with that. We're going to take a listen to a couple of tunes from that original album. The first was recorded, I understand, the Mr. Tambourine was recorded on January 20th of 1965 and began a fantastic year for the Byrds. Let's take a listen now. So that was Mr. Tambourine Man, the Byrds' first mega hit. Also one of the first times that Bob Dylan music wound up being turned into rock and roll, and this is the beginning of the whole folk rock music. Another song that was on that album that I particularly have always loved was a Gene Clark composition called All I Really Want to Do. Let's hear Roger talk about that song.
Yeah, that's a great song. I love All I Really Want to Do. It's a wonderful song. There's a funny thing that happened with that. Sonny and Cher recorded it as well. And they did it in the original 3/4 time, and I did it in a rock and roll 4/4 time, and added some different things to it. We made a chorus out of one of the verses, and so the Sonny and Cher one got to be the hit. And Bob Dylan came up to me and said, "You let me down, man."
Well, I don't know. I think that the Byrds version was better than the Sonny and Cher version. I've gone online and listened to the Sonny and Cher version, and you know, it's not really. It's okay. I'm not going to say it's not great. But it's not as good as this one. Here's the Byrds, All I Really Want to Do. Oh, I love that song. Those harmonies that the Byrds created were a fantastic aspect of their music. And I asked Roger about the harmonies. The harmonies. The vocal harmonies were just unique and original and fresh and beautiful. Would you mind commenting on that?
The harmonies and the birds were basically David Crosby. It was all his doing because Gene Clark and I sang unison and Crosby did all the harmonies. So he's really brilliant at doing harmony parts. He was able to kind of jump around between fourth and third and fifth parts and make it really interesting, sounding like three parts, but it wasn't.
Well, I'm going to play some of the harmonies from that first album, Mr. Tambourine Man. Here's three songs, here's three songs. I'm going to start you off with I'll Feel a Whole Lot Better than The Bells of Rimini and Chimes of Freedom. You're listening to KKCR, Kauai's Community Radio. This is the King Zor Show. We're taking a look at the life and music of Roger McGuinn today. But let's take this moment right now to listen to this message.
With KKCR's diverse program offerings, we reach more types of listeners than a single format station. Your company's support of non-commercial community radio is valued by our listeners. Become a KKCR underwriter. Call 826-7774 or visit kkcr.org and click on Underwrite.
Indeed, a fantastic way to show your support of community radio and also get the word out about your business. Well, we're looking at Roger McGuinn's life. We just heard a bunch of music from the Byrds' first album, Mr. Tambourine Man, focusing not only on the musicality but also the amazing vocals and harmonies that were going on. I particularly liked in The Bells of Rhythmy, the lead solo, you could really hear that almost clawhammer banjo influence in the lead. Beautiful work by Roger McGuinn there. Their next album was Turn, Turn, Turn. The title song was written by Pete Seeger, put together by Pete Seeger. The words are from the Bible, Ecclesiastes. Let's take a listen to that now. You are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. It's the King Zor Show. And tonight we're featuring the music of the Byrds and Roger McGuinn. We just heard from the album Turn, 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 the title song, as well as It Won't Be Wrong and Set You Free This Time. Well, the King Zor Show is made possible by listeners like you. In partnership with Kalaheo Chiropractic, Kamoa Ukulele, and The Healthy Hut.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments, built with a one-player-at-a-time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces. Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR, 652-9999, or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
Healthy Hut Market and Cafe, now right off the highway in the old school building in Kilauea. Organic and natural groceries, produce, raw foods, beer and wine, an expansive organic salad bar, fresh hot meals, smoothies, juices and coffees, and locally made products. Healthy Hut, a family-owned business, supports KKCR.
And for mahalo for supporting Kauai's Community Radio. Well, we're going to continue with Roger McGuinn's music here on the King Zor Show. Let me just come back and get a little more of this rambling on. I'm going to talk right now about when they first got started. They had, in August of 1964, they went to see the Beatles film A Hard Day's Night. And they decided to equip themselves with similar equipment to the Beatles. So Roger played a Rickenbacker 12-string guitar, the 360-12. And they got a Gretsch Tennessean guitar for Gene Clark, although David Crosby soon after that took over that. And then they wound up getting Ludwig drums and a fantastic setup. But particularly I'm interested, I've always been interested in the sound of guitars and how they are recorded. And Roger actually talked to me about that Rickenbacker guitar, and it's become a very famous guitar for him. The sound is very original. Let's take a listen to what he has to say.
I applied my five-string banjo technique to it. Instead of just picking it or strumming it, I used three-finger rolls, like Earl Scruggs, and that gave it a unique sound.
Yeah, now I also understand that it was recorded directly to the console rather than going through an amplifier.
Well, on Mr. Tambourine Man, I did use an amp, but after that, I went into the studio, into the board, and it was I got a better, more control over the sound with that.
The other thing about the Rickenbacker 12-string that's unique is that while on an acoustic 12-string, they've got the octave note placed before the root note, so you get the high note, the high string, then the low string. But the Rickenbacker was turned around, where the low string was first and then the high string.
Yeah, I think it gives it more ring that way. I'm not sure if they did that on purpose or it was just an accident. I remember F.C. Hall, the guy who owned Rickenbacker at the time, John Hall's father. Uh-huh. I asked him why he invented the Rickenbacker 12-string, and he said, oh, I did it for the folk movement. And he didn't realize that folk people wouldn't play electric instruments at that time.
A classic mistake. And yet, by the same token, that Rickenbacker 12-string became the sound for so many different musicians. It was also famous in many of the Beach Boys songs. Tom Petty plays one. I understand that when they recorded Roger live to the board, they used a couple of different compressors, different tube compressors that allowed the notes to ring out and have a great sustain. So I'm going to kind of shift to the beauty of 1965 in the career of Roger McGuinn and also of the Byrds. They started off in January recording Mr. Tambourine Man, and by October, they'd already recorded a second album, Turn, 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 and they were working on their third album by October. Let's take a little listen to Roger on 1965. 1965,
why recorded the album
Mr. Tambourine Man, you recorded Turn, 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 the great song from Ecclesiastes, and and then moved on, and by October, you're recording 8 Miles High.
Mm-hmm.
What a year.
Yeah, we didn't really want to get locked in a box. We got put into the box of folk rock, and we thought we could do something else, and we started experimenting with different things, a little country here and there. And then finally we got into the jazz fusion area, which was 8 Miles High, and they called that psychedelic.
Boy, I really love the fact that it's Coltrane. It's very Coltrane-like.
Yes, it was inspired by Coltrane's Africa Brass.
Beautiful. You're listening to Quiet Community Radio. I'm King Zor, and the show is all about the Byrds and Roger McGuinn, who's going to be featured in a concert here at the KCC on Saturday night. And I have a ticket to give away for the first caller who calls me at 826-7771. You'll get a ticket to this show. In the meanwhile, I'm going to play some more songs from the great album Fifth Dimension. Let's take a listen to Fifth Dimension.
Oh, how is it that I could come out to you and be still floating and never hit bottom and keep...
Man, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along?
Ah, yes, a beautiful song, Wild Mountain Time. That was from the album Fifth Dimension. From that album, we also heard 8 Miles High, the song Fifth Dimension, and Mr. Spaceman. Well, shortly after that, they recorded their next album, which was Younger Than Yesterday, including a great song, My Back Pages, by Bob Dylan, and Have You Seen Her Face, one of the songs when I first heard that, I was like, how do they get that tone? How do they play that? It's so beautiful. But the song that I'm really kind of going to play first from that album is the kind of, it's not really autobiographical. It's just sort of a reaction to what life is when you're getting famous really quick. And here it is. So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, featuring the trumpet of Hugh Masekela. Fantastic song. Here we go. Take a listen. There you go. That was My Back Pages. This is all from the Younger Than Yesterday album. So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, Have You Seen Her Face, and My Back Pages, which was a Dylan song. And in so many ways, the Byrds were, well, they covered a lot of Dylan music. And I asked Roger about that. This is what he had to say. Hang on a second. Let me get this right. Got to say that. Can't be on, and this can be on. There we go.
Well, I'm not sure it was really good for him. I think it might have opened his eyes at the beginning that he could do that, that he could be a rock artist and not just a folk singer or folk writer, which he was primarily known as when he hits with Peter, Paul, and Mary. But I know the Dylan material was great for us because it's so good. It's such beautiful poetry, and the imagery in those songs is so, so clear and vivid.
Indeed, that's Roger on Bob Dylan and why they played his songs so much. You just look back at the what we played already. Mr. Tambourine Man, Chimes of Freedom, and certainly My Back Pages. Here are a couple more Dylan songs. This one, the first one is... let me just change the order here just a little bit so we can keep this live and fresh. Yeah, here's a song that the Byrds covered, a Dylan song that they changed the words a little bit too because of the timing. This is a sort of a Bob Dylan song that became pertinent after we lost JFK. Here's He Was a Friend of Mine. There you go, the Bob Dylan song, He Was a Friend of Mine, with the words updated to reflect the loss of a nation after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Well, the next song I'm going to play comes from the movie and album Easy Rider. And the story that I heard was that Peter Fonda was producing the album, wanted a signature song for the album, and saw Bob Dylan and Frank and Musso's in on Sunset in Los Angeles, and asked him if he would write a song for Easy Rider. And Bob was a little, you know, he'd already seen a director's cut of the movie. Wasn't so really taken with the death at the end of the movie kind of thing and the whole sacrifice thing. But he did put on a napkin right there at the in the restaurant, wrote, "The river flows, it flows to the sea. Wherever that river flows, that's where I'm going to be." Handed it back to Peter Fonda and said, "Give that to McGuinn." And from that came this. Yeah, there you go. That was Ballad of Easy Rider from the soundtrack, and the song afterwards, which actually did appear on the soundtrack of Easy Rider, Wasn't Born to Follow. That was a song that was written by Carole King and Jerry Goffin, back from the Brill Building. Well, you might think that after all these fantastic things that I've been playing, that, you know, what else could there be? Well, there could be an album called Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Probably one of the most significant albums when it came to the transition from folk rock into country rock that many bands were doing at the same time that the Byrds were doing this, but somehow the Byrds' impact was just very, very, very strong and stronger than most. I'm going to play a few cuts from that album right now, and just let's take a listen to the beauty of this music. Starting you off with the quintessential. Well, first of all, I think it'd only be fair if we started off with Roger talking about that experience.
Well, it was the influence that Chris had had when he was a kid. He was into country music and bluegrass, and he, of course, folk music. And I'd always liked folk music and country music, too, and considered country music to be a part of folk music when I was growing up, that Earl Scruggs was a folk singer to me. So it wasn't a big departure from the kind of music I like.
Now, you recorded that in Nashville with session players from Nashville. How was that experience?
Yeah, we had Lloyd Green, and I think we had Roy Husky on the bass, Lloyd Green on the steel guitar, and some other session players. And it was really great. I mean, they were the Wrecking Crew of Nashville,
uh-huh.
And it was a cool experience to play with them. And they enjoyed working with us, too, because the Nashville recording structure was very stiff, and they weren't allowed to experiment or anything. They just had to play what was written in front of them. And we were very kind of experimental. We were doing things that they weren't used to doing, and they enjoyed that.
And then you're also playing banjo on that.
I played some banjo. Uh-huh.
Opportunity to get back to your roots.
Right, and we had John Hartford play banjo as well.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to hear a couple of songs from that album right now. My favorite, You Ain't Going Nowhere, another Dylan tune. That guy keeps popping up, doesn't he? Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Bob.
Clouds so swift, rain.
There you go. There were two cuts from Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Well, okay, three. You heard You Ain't Going Nowhere, Pretty Boy Floyd, and 100 Years From Now. We're going to get back to that album for a couple of more cuts. But I want to mention the fact that I'm not the only person here at KKCR who loves Roger McGuinn, who loves the Byrds and the music that they created. Tune in tomorrow night for Mystery Train. Slim's going to be bringing more and more and more of this music to your ears. Thank you, Slim. He's going to be filling in blanks that I'm leaving open. He's going to be talking about Graham Parsons and his influence on that album. And also, the show that Roger is doing this Saturday night at KCC is, in a way, a historical memoir of his own. And I'm leaving a lot of his career, particularly after the Byrds, out of this discussion because he talks about that in his show. Something that you might want to, if you're considering, something to consider if you're thinking about going to the show. I'm certain that it'll be a worthwhile event and something that everybody who loves Roger McGuinn and who loves the Byrds will enjoy deeply. He's going to tell stories about his time with the Rolling Thunder Review with Bob Dylan and his work after the Byrds. I do want to mention The Folk Den, which is Roger's current project. He's working with the University of North Carolina, and it's a monthly online folk song. And they're taking traditional folk songs and recording them in a freshly and talking about the song and the milieu from which it came. Think about going to the show. Definitely tune in tomorrow night for Mystery Train with Slim. He's on from 8 to 10. Let's get back to Sweetheart of the Rodeo now. I want to play Pretty Polly and a song that was written by Merle Haggard, Life in Prison. You'll recognize the fact that Pretty Boy Floyd was actually written by Woody Guthrie. So let's and also stick around. Noel Popo is coming up in a little bit. Another fantastic show. Here's the Byrds with Pretty Polly.
If I could die, my pain might go away.
Well, there you go. That's just about the end of the King Zor Show. It's been such a pleasure bringing you music of, by, and for Roger McGuinn. Saturday night, KCC, he'll be playing, telling his stories, and bringing you music live and fresh. Stick around for Noah Popo, and until next week, be kind to each other, folks. There's all kinds of kind, and whatever kind of kind your kind is, go out and live it. Make this world a better place. I'm going to finish this show off with a song from Roger's album, Cardiff Rose, evocative of the work he accomplished after the Byrds. And again, tune into Slim's show tomorrow night, 8 to 10. It'll be going even more into this, but here's a song from the Cardiff Rose album. It's a very beautiful song. I understand it was sort of written about life on the road on the bus with the Rolling Thunder Review. Not sure about that, but I do know I like the song. And Roger, thank you so very much for the music you've brought us through the years. Been a very strong influence on my life, on my music, my guitar playing particularly. Here's Jolly Roger from the Cardiff Rose album. Good Lord willing, I'll see you all next week.